Hello and welcome to Grapevine, your weekly local news magazine. This is volume 44, number 37, brought to you by the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association. Published on Friday the 13th of September 2024. I'm Graham, your presenter, joined this week by newsreader Margaret with some help from Dusty. And in the news this week, the bankrupt firm's apprentices are back in work. The Swallows and Amazon's Mimic is heavily fined, and the Norfolk Sunflower League announces the results. In addition, news from Vision Norfolk, and as I hinted, Dusty is with us with a dog's tale. All this coming your way during the next hour-ish, after some best wishes to a listener. Yes, it's very many happy returns to Brian Clitheroe for this coming Wednesday, the 18th. Hope it's a grand day, Brian. Okay, enter Margaret, stage left, and the first part of this week's local news.
Hello everyone, I'm Margaret and I'm bringing you this week's news. But before I begin, I must tell you that my friend Bernadette and I went to a concert at the Pavilion where the artists were paying tribute to the Everly Brothers, Buddy Holly and Jerry Lee Lewis. It was a packed house and the audience were of very tactfully here, a certain age, but we all knew all of the words to the songs. Oh, my lost youth. Anyway, enough of my meandering. So, if you're sitting comfortably, I'll begin. Apprentices' problems solved. Apprentices who lost their jobs when a Norfolk engineering firm went into administration have been taken on by another local company, Specialised Management Services SMS Alderley in Galston, went under in July, leading to hundreds of job losses. Apprentices, some more than 3 years through their four-year courses, were told by the college coordinating their training that they had just 12 weeks to find new jobs or they would lose their apprenticeships. Three apprentices have now been picked up by Great Yarmouth-based specialist water treatment company Aquazone. It was horrible to see young lads losing their apprenticeships, especially when they were all midway through, said Chad Ellis, a director at Aquazone. As a business that believes in investing in youth, we saw it as a great opportunity. They are all in work and loving it. We also picked up their apprenticeships so they don't lose their progress. They are all great lads who are keen to learn and further themselves. It's everything you would want in a young person. The apprenticeships are delivered through East Coast College, which has campuses in Great Yarmouth and Lowestoft. SMS Alderley went into administration on July the 24th. And the college told the apprentices they had just 12 weeks to find employment. This is a deadline set by the government, which provides funding for apprentices made redundant over that period to allow them to continue their off-the-job training. The government's 2023/24 apprenticeship funding rules state it will fund to completion any apprentice who has either completed at least 75% of their practical period or who was within 6 months of their final day of training. Aquazone has also employed a mechanical fitter who previously worked for SMS Alderley and hopes to take on another of its apprentices in the coming weeks. A man has been arrested after a car was set on fire in Galston. The car, which was parked in Danby Road, was set alight at midnight on August the 25th. A man in his 40s was arrested in connection with the incident. He was taken to Great Yarmouth Police Investigation Centre for questioning and released on bail until October the 3rd. Officers would like to speak to anyone who witnessed the incident or who has relevant information. They should get in touch by calling 101. New fence refused by council. A homeowner has been blocked from building a 2-metre fence in his front garden, even though he has one on his back garden. Andrew Mosser Bavington applied for permission to replace the boundary fence outside his home on Church Lane in Galston with a slightly higher one which would match the rear of the property. But Great Yarmouth Borough Council planners refused, saying the taller fence would be a harsh feature, harmful and out of character. They said that 1-metre front fences were part of the area's vernacular and that a 2-metre one would be visually jarring. The refusal of the plans has been a surprise to the applicant, as he had hoped the new boundary at the front of the property would be the same height as the panels already standing at the rear. Mr. Mosser Bravington has 12 weeks to appeal the decision. And this is all about celebrating diverse talent. The Great Yarmouth Arts Festival starts later this month, showcasing local talent and boasting a comprehensive lineup. The festival, which begins Friday the 13th of September, serving as a platform for diverse activities ranging from music, visual arts, theatre and heritage to a breakdancing show, herring trail and an eye-catching carnival. The carnival parade starts from Anchor Gardens at noon on Saturday, September the 21st. Led by the Dixie Mix Jazz Band, the parade will weave through the town before concluding in St George's Park, where participants will showcase their performances. The festival also features enchanting musical performances, including the bluesy tones of Hot Cold Ground on Saturday, September the 14th, and the 5-piece cappella group Sunriser the next day. Norwich Cathedral's Ashley Grote will host an organ recital on Wednesday, September the 18th, followed by the East Coast Sinfonietta concert featuring Beethoven's Violin Concerto and Mendelssohn's Italian Symphony on the 21st. From the 10th to the 21st of September, an art exhibition will take place at the Minster, displaying works by local artists and photographers. Alongside the artworks, a history exhibition will be held on the 14th, featuring heritage-based talks and walks. The St George's Theatre will host a flute and piano recital on Friday, September the 20th. Other entertainment offerings include an intricate exploration into the genius of Charles Dickens, tribute act including Alter Eagles 24, The Guitar Experience and Ron Jovi, and children's entertainer Captain Calamity. Shops and businesses in Great Yarmouth and Galston will display 30 student-made herrings, with prizes for those who find the most. The proceeds will benefit the surgical robot appeal at the James Paget University Hospital. For more information, visit the official festival website at greatyarmouthartsfestival.co.uk. Figures show that there has been more than a 500% increase in fly tipping in Great Yarmouth. Between April and June, there were 1,852 reports of fly tipping across the Great Yarmouth Borough. The same period last year saw 305 reports. The 507% increase is because Great Yarmouth Borough Council has changed the way that it records incidents. The council has changed how it records incidents to include waste removed by its teams before it is reported, as well as cases it is alerted to by the public. Council bosses said they hope the change will shine a light on those who continue to break the law, damage the environment and blight communities by illegally dumping waste in the borough. Councillor Paul Wells, Great Yarmouth Borough Council's portfolio holder for environment and sustainability, licensing and waste, said, "This review of how we collect statistics for fly tipping was incredibly important because it means people are able to see a much more accurate reflection of the problems our communities face. We all know the damage caused by those who flout the law to illegally dump rubbish. The impact these criminals have on the lives of our residents and the environment is costly, unsightly, and damaging to the environment. The council will always prosecute offenders where it can, and we have a successful track record of doing so. It is essential people report incidents to us and provide us with any information they can help us to take the action we know the community wants." Great Yarmouth Borough Council's environment rangers investigate reports of fly tipping and offenders and face an unlimited fine and or a jail sentence under the Environmental Protection Act. Fly tipping in the borough can be reported via the Love Clean Streets app or website, via email at environmentalrangers, all one word, at great-yarmouth.gov.uk or by calling 01493 86478. If you see any fly tipping, please get in touch by emailing details and pictures to bruno.brown@newsquest.co.uk. Three men caught with £200,000 worth of cannabis on the A11 have pleaded to be deported back to Albania. Blerim Muka, 30, Ronaldo Dimishi, 25, and Zezi Hajari, 23, were arrested after the huge haul was discovered when they were stopped on May the 14th. Their arrests led police to a 650-plant cannabis farm in the disused former David Hawkins Museum of Memories in Great Yarmouth. Appearing to be sentenced at Norwich Crown Court, they appealed to be deported back to their home country as quickly as possible. Speaking through an interpreter from the dock, Muka said, "I want to return home as soon as possible. I have my family there." The trio, who all have addresses in Birmingham, previously pleaded guilty to conspiracy to supply cannabis. Adjourning their sentencing due to issues with court time, Judge Andrew Shaw told them, "I am conscious that each of you have been remanded in custody since mid-May, and I'm sure you would like to know your sentences and when you'll be able to go home, but I'm afraid that cannot happen today." An autistic girl has shared her positive experiences with the Brownies and their many fun adventures. Sally Longworth, 9 and from Great Yarmouth, couldn't be happier about her time as a Brownie. Sally, diagnosed with autism and attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, ADHD, recalls the weekly Brownies meetings as the highlight of her week over the last 3 years. Later this term, Sally will transition into a local guides unit. She explains that school can sometimes be challenging for her, but Brownies always provide a fun-filled escape. Sally said, "I'm so proud to have been a Brownie and have loved going every week. We do a lot of things like crafts, baking and learning how to put up a tent. It's so much fun and I've earned lots of badges. I've made new friends there and I always feel more relaxed afterwards." Her mother, Selena Longworth, acknowledges the immense part Brownies played in Sally's life, both with her routine and developing her social skills. Her Brownies group has always gone above and beyond to make her feel included in everything. They have been a huge support, especially as it took such a long time to get diagnosis for Sally. The leaders of the group adapted the sessions to suit Sally's needs, even alerting her to any changes ahead of time. Brownie leader Lizzie Hundle expressed her joy in assisting Sally and anticipates seeing her overcome challenges at Guides. She said, "It's been such a pleasure to be able to support Sally and her family. She's made such good progress with us, and I look forward to seeing how she thrives in guides. Anyone interested in learning more about girl guiding can visit their website for further details. And this is about a lighting dispute. A business park in the Broads is locked in a dispute with planners over the use of external lighting. After being granted permission in April for a raft of developments at Hall Farm Business Park on Martham Road in Rowlesby, Chris Took is now appealing a condition that bans outdoor lighting without further approval. Planners at Great Yarmouth Borough Council insist the restriction is vital to protect the area's dark sky character and local wildlife corridors. But Mr. Took argues that the site already has numerous amounts of lighting. He has taken an appeal against the condition to the Planning Inspectorate, a government agency which can overturn decisions where it thinks councils have gone against planning law. Mr. Took has been given permission to retain 4 units and erect or complete 3 new buildings for storage, workshops and office use. Hall Farm Business Park, which was established in 2000, is home to a number of businesses, including Skipper's Print and Design, K&A Cars and Factory Blinds, Rowlesby. Banger racing nights in Great Yarmouth always prove a hit for petrol heads and families enjoying the mayhem of crashes and close scrapes. But the racing nights at Great Yarmouth Stadium have led to safety concerns being raised over dangerous situations being created by parked cars outside of the venue. Caister Parish Council has discussed concerns about the impact of parking outside of the stadium on banger nights at Yarmouth Stadium and reported them to Norfolk Police. At a meeting, the council heard that on racing nights, pedestrian lanes are being blocked by cars, and in turn, the cycle lane is being used by pedestrians, with cars being abandoned on double yellow lines too. Cars are said to be mounting the verges, and as a result, the situation is becoming rather dangerous along Yarmouth Road. There are additional fears that if action isn't taken soon, then when the new Lidl at the junction between Yarmouth Road and the Caister Bypass is built, the volume of traffic will become even worse. The site where the new Lidl is outlined to be built was previously used as an overflow car park for events held at the Yarmouth Stadium. Locals in the area have said that parking on the night of events is madness. Norfolk County Council has been informed about the ongoing issue too. The stadium's website says the site has a large car park and the fee is £2. The venue, which also holds greyhound racing meets, is next hosting a banger racing event on Sunday, September the 15th. It is called Back to Basics and starts at 5 p.m. The Mercury has approached the stadium managers for a comment about the issue of parking outside. A resurrected bid to build 3 family-sized bungalows in Ormsby has been refused yet again. The proposal was seeking permission for new housing on land to the east of Manship's Farm Cottage off Main Road in Ormsby. The proposed site was a builder's yard, and the applicant said the development would effectively round off the village boundary in this location. Planners at Great Yarmouth Borough Council said the application was near identical to one which was refused in February this year over concerns about the loss of a hedgerow. They said the new application's provision of additional hedgerows did overcome some concerns. However, the council again refused the proposal. Council planners said the application site was located outside of the development units. There were concerns over the design and layout, and there would be an unacceptable impact on local roads. Ormsby St Michael Parish Council also objected over concerns regarding access and the impact on the sewage system. In a planning statement, the applicant had said the development would play a social role by providing additional housing to meet supply. A homeowner battling coastal erosion has faced a fresh blow after his home was attacked by vandals. The incident comes just 18 months after Lance Martin's bungalow, which was teetering on the cliff edge at Hemsby, was successfully moved inland. But following the damage, his hopes of one day returning to his home have been dashed. He has since reported the crime to the police, and the act of vandalism has left locals reeling in anger. The culprits smashed windows in the home and also daubed crude graffiti on his walls. The 66-year-old, a former Grenadier Guard, managed to save his home from being washed away in March last year after volunteers and business owners helped move it back from the edge of the cliff. He had hoped to permanently move it to the Marrons, but its future is now uncertain. Mr. Martin is currently living in temporary accommodation and was trying to raise money to repair his home. He has racked up debts of more than £18,000 during the move operation and is in serious financial hardship, according to the Anglia Press agency. Hemsby County Councillor James Bensley said the community has been left in shock following the incident. He said, "Our biggest challenge has always been the sea and erosion. We never thought vandalism would be a factor. Everyone knows how important Lance's story is to Hemsby. To have this thrown into the mix is horrible and sickening. The community of Hemsby is really supportive of each other, but acts like this are so disheartening." Mr. Martin is due to join the Sir David Ames UK Children's Parliament this Saturday at the Dunes in Lodge Park, where an emergency Cobra meeting is being held to discuss the wider problems of North Sea erosion. And a story now about our new MP. Rupert Lowe has used his maiden House of Commons speech to say that being elected MP for Great Yarmouth was the proudest moment of his professional life, eclipsing taking Southampton to the FA Cup final. The Reform MP, who was chairman of the Saints when they lost 1-0 to Arsenal in 2003, also revealed he was now a season ticket holder for Great Yarmouth Town Football Club. He also used his sometimes fiery speech to lament what he saw as the decline of the town, telling MPs its people had been let down and forgotten far too long. "My constituents look around their town and they've seen their once booming home change without recognition," he added. The former banker blamed immigration for many of the town's woes. "Uncontrolled mass immigration has failed Great Yarmouth, as it has failed the entire country. Just like the majority of the rest of the country in 2010, the people of Yarmouth voted for lower immigration. In 2015, they voted for lower immigration. In 2016, they voted for lower immigration. In 2019, they voted for lower immigration. In 2024, Great Yarmouth also voted for lower immigration. The difference this time is that I will voice those concerns and fight as best as I can to drastically reduce the unsustainable number of people settling in our country. The roads are packed, the hospitals are full, GP surgeries are bursting at the seams, and dentists are inaccessible. Frankly, the system is broken, and mass immigration is largely responsible." The 66-year-old from Oxford claimed that wealth brought to the town had been stolen by the European Union. "Decades ago, the ocean brought huge wealth to Great Yarmouth from both fish and oil. Primarily known for its widely successful herring fishing industry at its peak, it was one of the most important fishing ports in Europe, also referred to as the herring capital of the world. That wealth was stolen from the people of Great Yarmouth and transferred overseas through our membership of the European Union. It is no surprise that my constituents overwhelmingly voted to leave the European Union. Mr. Lowe claimed there was now only one remaining fishing boat operating from Yarmouth. Mr. Lowe acknowledged the town's history of welcoming people from all over the world, but said immigration has brought chaos. Great Yarmouth has a very long history of proudly welcoming immigrants who came to the UK in order to work hard, integrate properly, and contribute to the economy, he added. The current chaos could not be further from that. We have local people, particularly women, feeling unsafe in their own town. We are told that crime is down, but I do not believe it, and the town certainly does not. We must be clear. The reporting of crime is down because many have lost faith in that police will act. I'm determined to change that. He also stated how he is proud to have been gifted a season ticket to watch the Bloaters. I am now the proud holder of a season ticket, which was an incredibly kind gift from the club's chairman, following the donation of my first month's parliamentary salary to the club. Don't worry, Madam Deputy Speaker, it has been appropriately declared. Well done, Mr. Lowe.
Well, more general news shortly, but firstly, news from Vision Norfolk. First off, the Leisure Group have heritage visit to Norwich Castle Museum and Art Gallery with a focus on the Paston Treasure, which is a painting which is a curiosity of curiosities, says here. Painted by an unknown artist in the mid-17th century, it both tells us about the Paston family, their collection of interesting curiosities from around the world, and the wider society in which they revolve. It always throws up just as many questions as answers, so join them in exploring this picture. Discover what's known and discuss together what's not known. The event is on Monday the 30th of September at 2:30 p.m. and more details from the team. Contact details later. Right, panto details next. Well, it had to come eventually. This year's Theatre Royal epic is Aladdin, and the performance is that on the 30th of December 2024 at 2:30 p.m. Cue comedy resume. A Magic Lamp and Three Wishes, What Could You Wish For? Starring Norwich favourite Joe Tresini, follow Aladdin in our genius production. That's not to put anyone off, as he dreams of finding love and making his fortune. Talking properly, I mean, not the actual pantomime. Will it be all that simple? Of course not. It's a pantomime, just like this today. Tickets for this audio-described performance are priced at £40, including an essential companion if required. Please book by Thursday the 31st of October, and to do so, call Mark or Helen on 01603 573000. That's 01603 573000, extension 341. Or you can email mark.smith@visionnorfolk.org.uk. And finally, Edward has asked us to let you know that due to staff training, the Yarmouth Hub is closed next Wednesday, that's the 18th of September. Access to the phone lines will be very limited, but we will get back to people as soon as we can, they say. We're open for business as usual the next day, and the coffee morning will return on the 25th of September at its usual time of 10 a.m. Right, back to the Grapevine newsroom, says he poshly, or should that be comfy chair, for more of this week's local news with Margaret, followed very closely by the welcome visit from Dusty.
A missing swimmer was winched to safety after a huge search mission involving three lifeboats. The lifeboats and a Coast Guard helicopter were involved in the search for a swimmer who went missing in the sea off Second Avenue in Winterton on the afternoon of Friday the 6th. The Caister and Hemsby inshore lifeboats were launched at 4 p.m, followed by the larger all-weather boat at 4:30 p.m, and began making coordinated search patterns of the area. During the search, reports emerged that shouts for help could be heard in the vicinity. As time became more critical, an HM Coast Guard helicopter joined the search efforts. A crew member of the Caister inshore lifeboat finally spotted the person in water 3/4 of a mile from the beach, and the crew were able to recover them from the water. The HM Coast Guard helicopter winched the casualty from the lifeboat to the shore, where they received further treatment from an ambulance crew. A spokesman for Hemsby Lifeboat said, "This incident was another excellent example of a well-coordinated search operation involving Hemsby and Caister lifeboats along with the Coast Guard. We're thankful that the casualty was found and rescued quickly. We remind everyone that when swimming in the sea, open water or rivers, buoyant sea aids should always be used. Our sincere thanks go to the Coast Guard and Caister Lifeboat for their invaluable assistance." Following on from our previous story of 2 weeks ago, a couple from Long Stratton have grown this summer's tallest recording sunflower in Norfolk, with one reaching 11 foot 2 inches in height. Karen and Malcolm Watkins planted dozens in their garden at the start of the season, and the towering specimen was the only survivor. The couple are among many who have been monitoring the height of their sunflowers this summer and then sharing their data with the Eastern Daily Press. Alan Sissons, an accordionist from Stoke Holy Cross, had many tall sunflowers in his garden, with the tallest reaching 11 foot, more than double the height of his wife, who was 5 foot 4 inches. Oh, bless her! Archie Hopes from Spixworth near Norwich also managed to tend his sunflower, held up by his garage to 11 feet. Pauline Monker Clark of Brundle nursed a sunflower in her garden that reached 10 foot 9 inches. She's planting more next year in the hope of reaching the same heights again. Graham Watlow of Palgrave Road in Great Yarmouth planted his sunflower seeds that doves and pigeons had spilled from his bird table. The plant reached 9 feet 6 inches. He said its head was so heavy that the neck was struggling to support it. The unofficial contest among readers was prompted by Miranda Vasey of Nottingham Way in Great Yarmouth, after she got in touch with this newspaper to show off her sunflower, which also reached 9 foot 6 inches. However, winners the Watkins will still have some way to go to beat the world record for the tallest example. That title belongs to Hans-Peter Schiffer in Karst, Nordrhein Westfalen, Germany. His sunflower reached 30 foot 1 inches and needed special scaffolding around it. The current record for the tallest sunflower in Britain is held by Richard Hope of Wigan, who set the record in 2012 with a whopping 26 foot specimen. A loving family man who died in the woods near a Norfolk beauty spot had been suffering from insomnia and health anxiety before his death, a court has heard. Brian Allen of Bradwell was found unresponsive in Waveney Forest, close to Fritton Lake, on April the 27th, after telling his family that morning he needed to get out of the house. An inquest into his death heard tragic details of the weeks leading up to his death, at the age of 66. Norfolk Coroner's Court heard that Mr. Allen, who was a retired accountant, had lived a healthy life, which saw him very rarely attend the doctors. But in the last weeks of his life, he began worrying about his health after attending an NHS health check, which identified high blood pressure. He was asked to monitor this at home, which showed lower levels, leading to the belief this was white coat syndrome, a phenomenon whereby discomfort at being in the GPs leads to higher readings. A few weeks later, though, he developed a sore throat, which he feared may have been cancer. He was referred to ear, nose and throat specialists who ruled this out, but he continued to worry and began to suffer from insomnia. On April the 22nd, he was referred to wellbeing services and was due to attend an appointment on May the 1st, days after he died. In a statement read to the court, his family said, "He was a man always on the go and hated not being able to go out. He was a loving family man who loved being in the countryside, walking his dog and pottering around the house. He loved life." Senior Coroner Jacqueline Lake concluded his death was suicide. It always sounded an ambitious target to get 1 million new trees planted in Norfolk by the end of next year, and so it has proved. Council leaders have revealed they are ditching the pledge they made in 2019, after admitting they are yet to reach half that number, with little over a year to go. So far, 486,000 trees have been planted since the launch of the 1 million trees for Norfolk. Leaders conceded they will miss the 1 million target next year and are instead aiming for a sustainable pace of planting an average of 150,000 trees a year until the million milestone is reached. At a meeting next week, where the Council's Climate Action Plan will be discussed, councillors are due to agree to ditch the target. The Council previously blamed the coronavirus pandemic for the lack of progress, saying that had affected how many trees could be planted as community groups were not able to gather to get digging. At one point, Conservative-controlled County Hall even considered buying up land to create a new country park where the trees could be planted to try to meet the target. And Steve Morphew, leader of the Labour group, said, "Even allowing for COVID, they've not even managed two-thirds and lost trees don't even feature. That's way off target. Along the way, they have proposed gimmicks, conveniently lost in the long grass like a country park." Less cynical massaging of the figures would encourage the community collaboration we need to improve our environment and help tackle the climate crisis. James Bensley, the Council's Cabinet Member for Environment and Waste, said the Council would have planted 600,000 trees by next spring. He said the Council was working with farmers to plant trees and hedgerows, had sold subsidised tree packs to people and secured money from businesses to offer grants to help community groups. He continued, "Our team works with residents and landowners so the trees are planted in the right place where they can survive and flourish. That means going at a sustainable pace, planting an average of 150,000 trees a year until we hit our million tree target. Our dedicated team is currently working on projects across the county, including our popular subsidised tree scheme, which launches later this month." Broads boaters pay £11,113. "It's a dastardly crime not heard of since the days of the Coot Club in Swallows and Amazons. But it seems like the offence of letting off is making an unwelcome return to the Norfolk Broads. The arcane phrase refers to casting off the boats of other sailors without their permission and setting them adrift. It formed the central part of Arthur Ransome's children's classic, The Big Six, part of the Swallows and Amazon series, in which members of the Coot Club are accused of letting off the boats of holidaymakers. New figures reveal that one person has been prosecuted by the Broads Authority for the offence this summer and fined £2,974 for the crime. The offender is one of 10 fined for a series of offences on the Broads, which also include not paying toll fees and overstayings at moorings. Latest figures show in total the 10 paid out more than £11,000 after being taken to court by the authority. Of the 10, Eight had not paid their toll fees and were told to stump up £5,940.64 in fines, victim surcharge, court costs and compensation. One boater had to pay £2,190 for overstaying on their mooring. The highest fine was for the offender prosecuted for letting off. The incident is thought to have involved casting off a hire boat in Great Yarmouth without the permission of the holidaymakers. That individual was found to have broken a bylaw which states no person other than a Broads Authority officer shall, without reasonable excuse, let go or attempt to let go part of a mooring line of any vessel except with the permission of the vessel's master. The offender was ordered to pay a £660 fine, £850 in costs awarded, a £264 victim surcharge and £1,200 in compensation. The antics are reminiscent of Arthur Ransome's book, The Big Six, the ninth in the Swallows and Amazon series, which was published in 1940. Set in the Norfolk Broads, the three young crew of the Death and Glory, all members of the Coot Club, find themselves in hot water after being framed for setting moored boats adrift. A group of their friends, who call themselves the Big Six, begin investigating the offences to clear their names. They eventually set a trap, which allows them to unmask the real offenders and exonerate the Death and Glories. The book was later turned into a BBC series, which was filmed on the waterways and aired in 1984. The BA has said its decision to prosecute for non-payment of tolls is always a last resort and is only used when all other conversations and avenues have failed. Where boat owners are genuinely struggling to pay their tolls, we will listen and work with them, a spokesman said. Money raised from toll fees is used to fund all the maintenance, dredging and mooring improvements it carries out on the waterways, and it is the only navigation authority in the UK that does not receive central funding for this. Costs awarded through prosecutions are used to offset legal expenses, while the fines and victim surcharges are not paid to the BA. And you might want to cross your legs while I read this out. Oh dear. Norfolk Council to shut loose. Strong bladders could soon be needed in a market town, as its only public toilet is to be shut as part of a raft of closures. North Norfolk District Council is considering fully or partially closing 40% of its toilets in an effort to plug a growing deficit of £1.3 million. This includes the only public convenience left in Stalham. Other sites earmarked to lose facilities include Cromer, Sheringham, Wells, Weybourne, Potterheim and Hickling. Critics worry about the repercussions of such a move, which could leave hikers travelling on the Norfolk Coastal Path at risk of getting caught short due to lengthy distances between toilets. But Tim Adams, leader of the Liberal Democrat-controlled authority, has warned the closures are vital to help balance the books. Under the plans, 14 of the 36 toilets NNDC manage will be shut completely or face closures over the winter period. Toilets that could close forever include those in Stalham, Potterheim and Weybourne. The council also intends to stop operating the West Runton, Walsingham and the Hickling toilets, but hopes it will be able to transfer the management of them to the Norfolk Wildlife Trust or local businesses. Eight toilets are due to be shut over the winter months, when there is less tourist footfall. These seasonal closures will affect two facilities in Cromer on the West Prom and Cadogan Road. Ludham Bridge, Bacton, Womack Staithe, Beach Road in Wells, Cart Gap and East Prom in Sheringham will also lose lose in the winter. The council hopes the closures will raise about £122,000 in savings. While public toilets are important facilities, the council has said it is a discretionary service and there is no legal obligation to provide them. At a cabinet meeting this week, Mr. Adams said the move was a necessary part of its efforts to make savings to plug a £1.3 million gap in its finances. In a perfect world, we would not be making these decisions, he said. But in some cases, we are either operating them for the benefit of other businesses or usage has got low and it is no longer suiting the needs of the community. Mr. Adams went on to justify the closure of Weybourne's toilet, which comes just 3 years after it opened to great fanfare, stating ongoing issues that they have left it swamped by campervan waste. The eco toilets are not connected to the main sewer system, leaving them frequently overloaded. It is pretty oppressive what staff have to go through, he added. Stalham's toilet is to close due to it being in an inappropriate position, and the council has said it is seeking to build a new one more centrally in the town. Members of the Conservative group at NNDC said they appreciated the funding pressures the council faced, but felt alternative solutions should be sought for some of the planned closures. Matthew Taylor, councillor for Stalham, wanted the closure of the town's toilet to be deferred until concrete plans were in place to either replace it or to explore Stalham Town Council taking over its management. I do not want to be left as the only town without a public toilet. Street events bring thousands and thousands of people to the town. Closing the only facility will put more pressure on businesses. Dr. Victoria Holliday, Conservative councillor for Coastal Ward, which covers Weybourne, worried shutting toilets there would mean the hundreds of thousands of hikers that walk the coastal path every year could face a long journey before finding a toilet. It would mean walkers travelling west from Sheringham would have to walk for about 15 kilometres before they reach the next public toilet in Blakeney. This would be an awfully long distance, she said. There must be a better solution. At the meeting, members of the Cabinet voted to explore full and winter closures of the toilets identified. Members also hope officers will be able to negotiate with town and parish councils to see if they'd be willing to manage the facilities in their place. A final decision on the closures will be made at a later date. Broads Authority warning. Boaters have been issued a warning after a man lost everything in a fireball blaze that destroyed his home. The Broads Authority has urged people to take precautions to protect themselves against the devastating consequences of boat fires. It follows Michael Moore's boat, which was moored up along the River Ant, being engulfed in flames after his cooking stove malfunctioned. He managed to escape without serious injury, but he has since been left with just the clothes on his back. A Broads Authority spokesman said, "Our sympathies are with the boat owner who lost their home and belongings to this fire." Unfortunately, incidents such as these serve as a reminder of how easily fires can start and spread with devastating consequences. We urge all boat owners to check they have a valid boat safety certificate and follow this advice to reduce the risk of a boat fire. The Broads Authority has issued the following advice. Test smoke alarms, gas leak detectors and carbon monoxide alarms regularly. Ensure the cabin is well ventilated to prevent the build-up of fumes. Ensure all hobs have a flame supervision device to shut off the gas if the flame is blown out. Be aware that portable camping equipment, such as stoves, can greatly increase the risk of fires on board. Keep flammable fabrics away from heat sources, such as cooking hobs. Know how to use your fire extinguishers and blankets and ensure they are both in date and located in a suitable place. Following the fire, a fundraiser has been started to help Mr. Moore rebuild his life. The fundraiser has already raised more than £1,000. Could Norfolk County Council take control of bus services? The possibility of Norfolk County Council running its own bus services is being explored by County Hall officials. Council leaders have tasked officers with drawing up a report into how the Labour government's plans to give local leaders power over buses could work in Norfolk. But senior councillors at the Conservative-controlled County Council have reservations that the government approach might not be a good fit in a rural county like Norfolk. Graham Plant, Cabinet Member for Highways, Transport and Infrastructure, said, "I have already set officers off on the trail of what we as a county might be able to do. It's not just the county council, it's the districts as well. I know Great Yarmouth Borough Council used to have its own bus service, which was switched off in the 1970s, I believe. What we've got to be careful with is that we are not left with unsustainable bus routes, which have to be paid for through rates and taxes to maintain them. I struggle with the perception that the bus companies would keep their lucrative routes and we would end up with the non-lucrative routes which we would have to find money for to keep them going. I just want to have conversations with officers to work out what this would look like, to fully understand it in a rural setting, not an urban setting." Mr. Plant was responding to a question from Liberal Democrat Councillor Rob Colwell at a meeting of the Council's Infrastructure and Development Committee on September the 11th. Transport Secretary Louise Haig claimed her bus revolution will save vital routes, with councils granted new powers to run bus services, currently only available to metro mayors. The model, bus franchising, involves councils granting private companies the right to operate, but retaining control over aspects such as routes, timetables and fares. Helen Whateley, Shadow Transport Secretary, said, "Labour's plans are unfunded. They need to explain whether local authorities will raise council tax or make cuts to vital services like social care to fund this." Broads Authority warning. Boaters have been issued a warning after a man lost everything in a fireball blaze that destroyed his home. The Broads Authority has urged people to take precautions to protect themselves against the devastating consequences of boat fires. It follows Michael Moore's boat, which was moored up along the River Ant, being engulfed in flames after his cooking stove malfunctioned. He managed to escape without serious injury, but he has since been left with just the clothes on his back. A Broads Authority spokesman said, "Our sympathies are with the boat owner who lost their home and belongings to this fire. Unfortunately, incidents such as these serve as a reminder of how easily fires can start and spread with devastating consequences. We urge all boat owners to check they have a valid boat safety certificate and follow this advice to reduce the risk of a boat fire." The Broads Authority has issued the following advice: test smoke alarms, gas leak detectors and carbon monoxide alarms regularly. Ensure the cabin is well ventilated to prevent the build-up of fumes. Ensure all hobs have a flame supervision device to shut off the gas if the flame is blown out. Be aware that portable camping equipment such as stoves can greatly increase the risk of fires on board. Keep flammable fabrics away from heat sources such as cooking hobs. Know how to use your fire extinguishers and blankets and ensure they are both in date and located in a suitable place. Following the fire, a fundraiser has been started to help Mr. Moore rebuild his life. The fundraiser has already raised more than £1,000. Could Norfolk County Council take control of bus services? The possibility of Norfolk County Council running its own bus services is being explored by County Hall officials. Council leaders have tasked officers with drawing up a report into how the Labour government's plans to give local leaders power over buses could work in Norfolk. But senior councillors at the Conservative-controlled County Council have reservations that the government approach might not be a good fit in a rural county like Norfolk. Graham Plant, Cabinet Member for Highways, Transport and Infrastructure, said, "I have already set officers off on the trail of what we as a county might be able to do. It's not just the county council, it's the districts as well. I know Great Yarmouth Borough Council used to have its own bus service, which was switched off in the 1970s, I believe. What we've got to be careful with is that we are not left with unsustainable bus routes which have to be paid for through rates and taxes to maintain them. I struggle with the perception that the bus companies would keep their lucrative routes and we would end up with the non-lucrative routes which we would have to find money for to keep them going. I just want to have conversations with officers to work out what this would look like, to fully understand it in a rural setting, not an urban setting." Mr. Plant was responding to a question from Liberal Democrat Councillor Rob Colwell at a meeting of the Council's Infrastructure and Development Committee on September the 11th. Transport Secretary Louise Haig claimed her bus revolution will save vital routes, with councils granted new powers to run bus services, currently only available to metro mayors. The model, bus franchising, involves councils granting private companies the right to operate, but retaining control over aspects such as routes, timetables and fares. Helen Whateley, Shadow Transport Secretary, said, "Labour's plans are unfunded. They need to explain whether local authorities will raise council tax or make cuts to vital services like social care to fund this." Well, I'm here at Meadow Court with our friend Dusty, legend in her own lifetime, and she has a poem to read, so I shall pass you on to Dusty.
Hello, everybody. Well, I was sitting in the chapel the other day, as you do, at the hospital, and one of our lovely staff came in with a piece of paper waving at me and said, I've just written a poem which I wondered if you'd like to share with your grapevine listeners, because I think it might just cause a few smiles. I said, well, anything to cause a smile would be lovely these days. And then I saw she'd got another piece of paper attached to it, which said, "Belton Village Voice, which is the writing competition 2024 Certificate of Achievement to Tina Andrews." So I thought, how lovely is that? So let's give her an airing, and I think you'll like this. I hope you like this, especially if you've all had dogs in the past. I think you'll equate with this quite well. It's called, quite simply, Walkies. One more minute, and she'll say the word I want to hear. Walkies! Booms around the house. I jump up as quick as a mouse. Lead clipped and poo bags to hand. Nothing is stopping this little hound. The bolt slides and the gate opens, eyes down and nose to the ground. Scampering down the garden path, she tells me to slow up. I said, no. I sniff at this and I sniff at that. Then suddenly I spy a cat. I often see that cat looking at me, comes in my garden for a pee. I pull and I try to catch that cat, but she shortens my lead and says, it'll scratch. I bound along with the occasional stop to let all the other dogs know just what I've got. There's a figure coming down the lane. Is it a dog? Oh, it drives me insane. I'm off to explore. Who could it be? My paws are galloping. Oh, like the horses I see. Nearer I get, suddenly I stop. Wagging my tail, letting out a growl, with one ear up and one ear down. I make a new friend, or give him a frown, and carry on walking, with nose to the ground. I do some business for all to see. She bags it and pops it in a bin near the tree. Now I feel light and empty, thinking of my food dish of plenty. Like a homing pigeon, my senses kick in, and I'm racing back to where I begin. Through the gate, oh, cat's gone, in the door where I belong. Dinner's over, playtime ends. Oh, a lap to lay on and sleep descends. Until the birds start to sing, and I hear the whistling of dustbin men, and then it's walkies all over again.
Thank you for that, Dusty, and I'm sure you'll pass on our thanks to the nurse.
I will.
What wrote it, as they say?
The nurse is one of the staff, and she's Tina Andrews.
Oh.
And I'm so pleased that she brought it. She just wanted to share it with you, which I thought was a nice idea.
Thank you, Dusty. And from Dusty telling us a tale of a dog, she now switches to cats.
I feel like saying, like Alvar Liddell used to, and this is the news read by Alvar Liddell. Anyway, the perfect cat's holiday spot could soon open on the Norfolk coast. Aaron and Fay Howard have applied to build a cattery at New Farm Bungalow on Newport Road in Hemsby. The 23-pen boarding house would have sleeping and exercise areas and secure corridors to ensure that the furry guests won't pull any disappearing acts. The cattery would be for housing cats while the owners are away from home. The couple are proposing to build two outbuildings to the rear of their existing bungalow. The pens would contain sleeping and exercise areas, and a secure corridor would add an extra layer of security for the cats and would prevent their escape. Plans say it would be open 5 days a week from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m, then drop-offs and collections would be by appointment only, with each pet staying for a minimum of 3 days. Of the 23 proposed pens, 19 could accommodate up to 2 cats from the same household, and the remaining 4 pens could house up to 4 cats for the same home, resulting in a total capacity of 54 cats. According to the plans, potential odour issues would be mitigated by weekly waste collections, spot cleaning every morning and evening, and the pens being deep cleaned when vacant. The application will be discussed at a meeting of Great Yarmouth Borough's Council Development Management Committee on Monday, September the 16th. In a report prepared ahead of the meeting, planners now have recommended the bid for approval. They said the cattery supports the creation of a new business in the rural community. Another reason for permitting the bid was the appointment-only system by dropping off and picking up cats. Now, this was considered to represent an appropriate solution to mitigating potential highways impacts and also minimising noise disruptions to neighbours. And all I can say at the end of that story is that I am sure that the cats would be delighted to know that a performance of Cats by Andrew Lloyd Webber will be at the Lowestoft Players' home, the Players' Theatre in Lowestoft, in a couple of weeks' time. I expect they'll enjoy going to it.
Withered leaves collect at my feet.
Elaine Page and Midnight from a LW's Cats. What else? Okay, the rest of this week's news coming up, with Margaret getting a bit of help from Dusty.
A local food bank has opened a new warehouse. The Yarmouth and Magdalen Food Bank, a partnership between Great Yarmouth Pathway and St Mary Magdalen Church in Galston, officially opened the site in Cobham earlier this month. The opening ceremony was attended by the Mayor of Great Yarmouth, Councillor Paula Waters Bunn, the Bishop of Thetford, the Right Reverend Ian Bishop, as well as staff, volunteers, supporters and representatives of referral agencies. The Mayor thanked the trustees, the staff and volunteers of the food bank for their efforts in supporting vulnerable community members facing food crises. She expressed hope for a future where food banks are no longer necessary. Bishop Ian said, "It is so encouraging to see so many volunteers giving their time to the work of the food bank. As the Book of James in the Bible says, faith without works is dead, and I am grateful to all those who give up their time to make the world a better place." Jennifer King, project manager, said, "Last year, the Yarmouth and Magdalen Food Bank distributed 5,361 food parcels, of which 1,747 were distributed to children. The new warehouse means that we will be able to manage food stocks in order to enable us to continue to give vital support to those in crisis. The work takes place in partnership with more than 50 referral agencies and with the support of Great Yarmouth Dial and Norfolk and Waveney Mind." Mrs. Price said, "With the new warehouse, we are hoping for an increase in food and monetary donations to meet the current demand. So for more information about supporting the food bank, visit the Yarmouth and Magdalen Food Bank website."
A Norfolk Broads landmark that has fallen into dereliction could soon be brought back to life after officials gave the green light for it to go ahead. The owners of Toft Monk's Mill hope to restore the Grade 2 listed wind pump, which is located within Halvergate Marshes on Haddiscoe Island, to full working order. Mr. and Mrs. Singer, the couple behind the project, also want to rebuild the engine shed and construct a two-bed home next door to the mid-19th century mill. The humpback steam pump is described as a rare survivor of its kind, and although some parts are missing, officers say it is mostly in sound condition. Officials at the Broads Authority have recommended plans are approved, but there has been backlash from the Environment Agency. Staff there are worried it is in a high-risk flood zone, an area usually deemed inappropriate for residential homes. But the BA believes the benefits outweigh the flooding concerns, as building the home will help provide a sustainable use of the site and secure the future of the mill in the Broads landscape. Officers have recommended the scheme to be approved with a number of conditions, which include ensuring the restoration of the mill is completed before the home is built. Haddiscoe Island is located 7 miles inland from the sea in the Norfolk Broads. The 3-mile square block of grazing land is surrounded by the New Cut and the Yare and Waveney before they unite at Breydon Water. It can be reached by road over the bridges at St Olaves and Haddiscoe, but access to most of the island is by farm track. Journalist and Loose Women star Janet Street Porter moved to the island in 2019, revealing she had relocated to Norfolk to live in a ramshackle house miles from a road surrounded by water, hares, marsh deer and free-roaming cattle. Toft Monk's Mill is not the only mill on Haddiscoe Island. Earlier this year, Red Mill, which has been turned into a quirky home, went up for auction and was sold for £265,000, £40,000 above the guide price.
A shopkeeper's bid to sell alcohol for longer hours has sparked the concerns of a local councillor. Le Chateau, on Northgate Street in Great Yarmouth, is hoping to boost business by expanding its alcohol sales hours. But the licence application has prompted an objection from Jade Martin, borough councillor for Central and Northgate Ward, who fears the late night hours could have a negative impact on residents. Miss Martin is not objecting to the shop being opened later for the sale of groceries, but said the extended availability of alcohol could have an impact on the prevention of crime, public safety and the protection of children from harm. Despite the concerns, the shop maintains its spotless record since opening in 2005. Hashar Wishasingh, I hope, correct pronunciation, the applicant, said Le Chateau has never experienced any antisocial behaviour or incidents relating to public safety or public nuisance, and also added that other shops in the area are permitted to sell alcohol for extended hours.
A member of staff at a Norfolk supermarket has claimed that shoplifting at the store is out of control and that staff are powerless to act. The worker, who asked not to be named, said there had been a significant rise in thefts from the shop at the Co-op on Magdalen Way, Galston. They added that staff were told by managers not to intervene if they spotted an offence for their own safety, and that this meant the thieves were becoming increasingly brazen. The worker said, "The thieves are making no effort even to be discreet. They are grabbing meat and cases of beer or whatever they want and are blatantly just walking out. We are told by our bosses not to stop them in case they react aggressively and harm us, so essentially we are powerless." A spokesman for the East of England Co-op food store said they were aware of recent thefts and defended the company policy of not allowing staff to try to stop thieves themselves. "We're aware of recent thefts at our food store on Magdalen Way," he added. "We've put procedures in place for our colleagues to follow them when they witness shoplifting in our stores. This includes reporting details to our security team, who provide 24/7 support from our fully accredited alarm receiving centre, as well as to the police. We ask our colleagues never to intervene under any circumstances to protect their own safety and that of their colleagues." Challenging shoplifters not only puts the colleague at risk of harm, but can also put other colleagues and customers at risk too. We operate a people before property policy. Last week, two shoplifters were jailed for a series of thefts in Great Yarmouth and Galston, including the Co-op store. The East of England Co-op has been criticised by its own staff over its shoplifter policy before. Earlier this year, a worker was sacked from his post at the branch in Hall Road, Norwich, after trying to challenge thieves on three occasions. Team manager Damon Moon had worked at the shop for 7 years, but was dismissed for serious breach of security policies and procedures. Like other parts of the UK, Norfolk has seen a surge in shoplifting. However, Chief Constable Paul Sanford has recently trumpeted his force's success in tackling the crime. Norfolk Police's charging rate for the thefts is 31.7%, compared with a 5.5% for the Metropolitan Police.
The coffee shop and car park at Acaster Village playing field is to close while upgrade work is carried out. The King George V playing field is currently having new equipment installed, and the facilities will close on September the 16th to allow work to proceed. The site is managed by the Caister Playing Field charity, which has called for drivers to please respect our neighbours when parking on Allendale Road while the car park is closed for resurfacing. And the section of the park that is having new equipment installed is currently fenced off while works are ongoing.
Winter fuel payment cut. Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer has seen off a backbench rebellion over plans to cut the winter fuel allowance. MPs voted 348 to 228 against a Conservative motion for the government's controversial policy to be blocked, with no vote recorded for 53 Labour MPs. Locally, Norwich South Labour MP Clive Lewis was among those for whom no vote was recorded. However, no vote being recorded does not automatically equate to an abstention, as they may have received permission to miss a vote. Mr. Lewis said he had been paired, referring to an arrangement between two MPs of opposing parties to not vote in a particular division. It enables an MP to be absent without affecting the result of the vote, as they effectively cancel each other out. Mr. Lewis said, "I was paired, but my signing of the early day motion tells my constituents everything about my position in this matter. That early Labour Day motion called for the changes to be postponed and expressed concern they were being made without consultation or an impact assessment." Mr. Lewis later posted a statement on his website in which he said personal reasons meant he had not been present for the vote. But he said, "Throughout my decade in Parliament, I have advocated for universal basic services and benefits to be expanded, not contracted, as we enter into the 21st century, with all the challenges that lie ahead of us. Universalism is the way forwards. Means testing is a backwards-looking approach. At the general election, I committed to prioritising tackling deprivation. My views on the government's decision about the winter fuel payment were always very clear. I co-sponsored Early Day Motion 115, calling on the government to postpone this decision and introduce a comprehensive strategy to tackle fuel poverty, health inequality, and low incomes among older people. There are better ways to raise money and create economic stability than undermining a universal benefit like the winter fuel payment." Norfolk and Waveney's other Labour MPs, Alice MacDonald, Norwich North, Terry Jeremy, South West Norfolk, Ben Goldsborough, South Norfolk, and Jess Asato, Lowestoft, all voted against the Tory motion. In a statement to constituents, Ms. Asato said the government had to make the tough decision because of the $22 billion overspend her party had inherited from the Conservatives. Under the government changes, the winter fuel allowance payment of up to £300 for pensioners will be limited to only those claiming pension credit or other means-tested benefits. It's estimated that 225,000 pensioners in Norfolk and Waveney will be among 10 million who lose the allowance, saving £1.4 billion this year. The three Conservatives who retained their seats in May's general election, George Freeman, Mid-Norfolk, James Wilde, North-West Norfolk, and Jerome Mayhew, Broadland and Fakenham, voted for their party's blocking motion. Great Yarmouth MP Rupert Lowe, Reform UK, North Norfolk MP Stephen Aquarone, Liberal Democrat, and Waveney Valley MP Adrian Ramsey, Green, all voted for the Conservative motion. Mr. Aquarone said, "While we understand the dire state the Conservatives left the public finances in, now is not the time to be cutting support to some of the most vulnerable people in our society." And this is about an inquest, a sad story. Mystery surrounds the death of a former Royal Mail worker who went downhill after losing his job as a postman. Paul Brown of Cliff Hill in Galston, near Great Yarmouth, was found deceased inside his home on August the 17th. The 59-year-old had not been seen by his neighbours for between 2 to 3 weeks, so raised the alarm with Norfolk Police. And officers discovered Mr. Brown's body in a bedroom inside the property and believe he had been there for some time. An inquest into his death took place at Norfolk Coroner's Court, based at County Hall. Evidence read to the court in Norwich, including that of a long-time friend and former colleague. He explained that Mr. Brown was let go from Royal Mail several years ago. They had stayed in touch but had not seen each other for a few weeks. He had tried to visit him at his home twice at the end of July, but there had been no answer. He added that losing his job was the worst thing that could have happened to him, and he went downhill after this. The last time he saw him, he noticed Mr. Brown really wasn't looking after himself and had been struggling following his mum moving into a care home. A statement from his brother, Stephen Brown, added they were very estranged and had only spoken recently after their mother became ill, the first time since they were aged 15. He said he knew his brother was very reclusive, did not venture far, and was very withdrawn from society. Officers who discovered Mr. Brown's body said they had been called by a neighbour at around 6:30 p.m. following concerns for his safety. Inside his home, they discovered numerous Royal Mail uniform jackets hanging on the back of a bedroom door and a Royal Mail bag that he had used for shopping. He had also been wearing a Royal Mail fleece when he died. Senior Coroner for Norfolk, Jacqueline Lake, said, "There is no evidence as to the events leading to Mr. Brown's death, and the evidence does not reveal the means by which he came by his death. On that basis, my conclusion is an open one." Recreated in Lego. Hemsby's battle with coastal erosion has been immortalised in Lego. But while the tiny bricks tell a big story, the real battle against coastal erosion grows more urgent as winter approaches. The recreation, crafted by world record holders Iconic Bricks, hopes to bring the issue into sharp focus for young parliamentarians gathering in the village this weekend. It will take centre stage at the Sir David Amos UK Children's Parliament Emergency Cobra meeting on Saturday, September the 14th. Child Prime Minister Clark Dearson, 11 years old, is travelling from Essex to co-chair the event. He said, "The Environment Agency has used iconic bricks for Lego recreations before. I felt using Lego for the Children's Parliament COBRA meeting on coastal erosion will help make the emergency Hemsby residents face more real for young people and get authorities to sit up and take notice. People are being made homeless and there's no help in sight. Something needs to be done, he said. Experts from agencies including the Hemsby Parish Council, Save Hemsby Coastline, Hemsby Independent Lifeboat, Great Yarmouth Borough Council and Coastal Partnership East will attend the meeting. Iconic Bricks hold the Guinness World Record for the largest Lego recreation of the Tower of London. They based the Hemsby recreation of flyover footage shot on August the 30th for Save Hemsby Coastline. The Lego recreation will be open to the public to view from 10 a.m. on Friday, September the 13th at House 29 in the Dunes by Lodge Park Homes in the former Pontin site. In December 2023, the Hemsby coastline lost 3 to 4 metres of beach and 5 cliff-top houses were demolished. Residents are bracing themselves for a repeat this winter, but with no funding in sight for sea defences, the situation is bleak. The Children's Parliament was set up in 2021 for children aged 7 to 11 years old and is named after one of its founders, the murdered MP Sir David Amos. A bid to build 29 houses in Bradwell is being recommended for approval, despite facing almost 100 objections from neighbours. The scheme, submitted by Aldred's estate agents, would see the houses built on land east of King's Drive. The application was first submitted in September 2023, but was then withdrawn in April this year following the collapse of Lowestoft-based developers Wellington Construction. An updated application was lodged to planners at Great Yarmouth Borough Council in June. The plans include 26 houses that would be sold on the open market and 3 flats categorised as affordable. There would be 7 two-bedroom, 12 three-bedroom and 7 four-bedroom houses, as well as 2 one-bedroom flats and 1 two-bedroom flat. The application is facing 95 objections from neighbours who have raised a variety of concerns, including the volume of traffic, lack of space for children to play, and the impact on local services. Bradwell Parish Council is also opposed to the plans and flagged a lack of facilities, including dentists and medical centres, which are stretched to the limit. The bid also received 5 letters of support. In August, the applicants resubmitted the plans with minor changes to the layout and house type. The scheme will be discussed on Monday, September the 16th, by Great Yarmouth Borough Council's Development Management Committee. Ahead of the meeting, planners said the application is considered acceptable and suitable to be recommended for approval. A related bid to build 75 houses off Meadowland Drive was also withdrawn in April. That bid was likely to be rejected by the council. Villagers had previously opposed both developments, writing 97 letters of objection against them over fears they would lead to increased traffic and strain on public services. Wellington Construction, one of the region's major building companies, ceased trading in November last year, leading to the loss of 51 jobs. And some news about Galston. Galston's transformation. A historian has published a book showcasing Galston's transformation through 100 photographs. John McBride, 75, from Warren Road, Galston, was inspired by his parents' postcard collection and his fascination with the town's history. His book, Galston Then and Now, compares century-old images of the town with photographs of their current state. Mr. McBride said, "My parents collected postcards of Galston, but I wanted to see where the buildings came from." His research began as a teenager, spending Saturdays at Yarmouth Library studying old copies of the Yarmouth Mercury. This, along with examining street directories and books, led to his first publication in 1998, A Diary of Great Yarmouth. This was followed by the Yarmouth Compendium in 2012, An Illustrated History of the Town. The idea for his latest book was sparked by the Galston Community magazine. Mr. McBride said, "I was approached to write some articles. My initial reaction was to say there wasn't enough material for just Galston. I did some along the railway, then I started the Then and Now series. I thought six would be enough, but I started collecting more postcards and I'm still getting them." Mr. McBride took photographs to compare the old scenes with the way the streets and buildings look today. He has incorporated around 60 articles with another 40 to create his book. Many of his 300 postcards were originally produced by photographers Jackson's Faces, who had a shop and studio on Galston's Lower Promenade. Mr. McBride's book, with its combination of pictures and facts, provide reminders of the past, including the holiday camp, the long-lost railway line, and the beach full of council and privately owned huts. Galston Then and Now is priced at £10.99 and is available from Galston High Street Shops, Music Lovers, and What Is Hip.
Well, that's it for this week's edition, which is copyright 2024 of the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association. News content is adapted mainly from the Great Yarmouth Mercury. However, the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association accept responsibility for editorial decisions made for this recording. Don't forget, you can contact us from our website at grapevinegy.org if you have any questions or queries over our service. Your newsreader and presenter next week will be Desney, so we hope for your company then for much more of your local news. In the meantime, from all at Grapevine, stay safe and well, and bye for now.